Christians should operate fully in the public square, and that includes by engaging with the media.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And one of the things that they can do is encourage reporters to report things accurately and truthfully. They can express their opinions in letters to the editor and op-eds. And one of the things that's important is to just let people in the world know of the differences of opinion that are out there, that Christians don't share a lot of the secular thinking that is promulgated by the media. And so being bold and being able to stand up and simply speak truth in the public square, it's a powerful witness to others, and it's a service you can perform for your community and the country at large.
You can meet and hear Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christians engaging the news media at our Fall Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Trump says you must be able to speak language English, qualified, and have a job skill. Jesus would not qualify to come in Trump's country, and he would not qualify to get in Jesus' kingdom.
Wherever you have polytheism, you have cultures, you have this fractured understanding of God where he's splintered up into all these different beings, you always have a lowering of ethical and moral standards as well.
I can come to the scriptures with humility, knowing that I can err, but I ought to have the confidence that the truth of God's word can be known there and that I can in fact know it.
Stay-at-home moms, antiquarian enthusiasts, some sensual Cali, loves, issues, etc. Can you see the fish?
Yes, I see the fish. It's right there.
The kind of rhetorical confusion caused by the sexual revolution is only now flowering into its full kind of ugly bloom. Pronouns are either under attack or being rubbed out of existence. His, her, he, she, they're considered, well, sexist at the very least, even think of another person in those terms. We have to honor someone else's chosen pronoun. And of course, behind that isn't simply bad grammar, but it's bad thinking, wrong thinking about, well, reality. There are few things more basic to reality than the simple distinction between male and female, and that is not only under attack, it's being offered many different alternatives. Do those alternatives, these different ideas about male and female and gender and sex, do they hold any water? Are they actually something you can live out except in kind of your self-imposed fantasy world? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, September the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Glenn Stanton of Focus on the Family about the inconsistent ideology of transgender apologists. After that, Dr. Joel Olowski will join us from Concordia Seminary to remember 3rd century Bishop Cyprian of Carthage, remembered by the church on the 16th of September. We'll talk about the missional value of the doctrine and practice of closed communion with Pastor Rob Kieslowski of Philadelphia Lutheran Ministries. Nicole Russell will be our guest to talk about the new trend in pro-abortion rhetoric, and that is celebrating your abortion. And then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We have four sound bites that we've brought together. We're going to play them for you, and then you'll give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, and cast your vote for one of them to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last half hour of the program. Joining us to talk about the inconsistent ideology and thinking of transgender apologists, Glenn Stanton, Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family and author of the books The Ring Makes All the Difference and Loving My LGBT Neighbor, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Not Even Trans Apologists Can Keep Their Ideology Straight. Glenn, welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Todd. It's good to be with you.
What do you think is the most important thing you have learned by doing what you do, which is often going out onto liberal college campuses and university campuses and speaking to groups that are definitely not your crowd about the issues of sexuality and gender?
Yeah, Todd, that's a great, great question. I would answer it in kind of two different ways. I mean, one is, or the first is the most unexpected, and that is as Christians, it's so important for us to go look our opponents and those who disagree with us in the eyes, you know, not as a challenge or a confrontation, but to see them as real people, hear them, see their body language, let them see yours, and really connect person to person, face to face. And, you know, sometimes you get great anger. Many times you get just brokenness that just breaks your heart. And then sometimes you just get honesty. I mean, they have honest questions about what it is that you believe, and they have misunderstandings about it, and you can straighten those things out. But on the other side, just rhetorically about the issue, what amazes me, and I could not emphasize this more, is how unthought out the gender theorists are. Basically, I mean, they operate in sound bites, and operate in sound bites that they've gotten from their gender theory professors or things that they've heard online. And it's almost sadly like you pull a string on these people and you just hear the same thing, where I like to argue, I like to disagree, and sometimes you're like, you know what, give me a fresh argument on this rather than just, you know, these little trite sound bites and phrases, which admittedly we as Christians can do too. We tend to do that when we live in our own bubbles. But that's what I see the most. And then the other is just the, you know, beyond these sound bites, glaring inconsistencies and embarrassing inconsistencies of what they talk about. Let me give you just a quick example. Is, you know, I will say I come here as a Christian. I'm from Focus on the Family, and I believe that male and female exist, or that humanity exists as male and female, and male and female exclusively. And every time that happens, I will get booed. You know, like, how could I say something so stupid? And I will ask, okay, all the women in this room, raise your hand. All the men in this room, raise your hand. Anybody who doesn't fit into one of those two categories, raise your hand. And on college campuses, I have people raise their hand. Well, if you meet somebody who is neither male or female, you want to meet them. You want to hear their story. You want to find out what they are. So I invite them up and say, you know, let me hear your story. Well, every time they come up, and this doesn't surprise me, it's not going to surprise any of your listeners, guess what? They are some variation on male or female. You know, either they're a female that's kind of butch or a male that's kind of feminine, but they're not a third, fourth, fifth, sixth gender that, you know, has a different name and that you've just never seen before. It's always male and female and some variation on male and female. And, you know, it's like, you know, facetiously, I would love to meet a third, fourth, or fifth gender. That would be very interesting and just my human experience. But I have yet to meet one, much less all the 68 different genders that they say that there are.
You say it's often, you're often met with jeers and boos when you simply state the state of reality, that human beings exist in male and female, and sometimes laughing as well. Why do you think people think that's funny nowadays?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, first of all, it is. If I had insulted their school mascot, you would not get this reaction. You just simply wouldn't. And it is like putting a flame to gas. I mean, it just happens instantaneously. But what it is I am challenging what they wish to be true. That, you know, according to gender orthodoxy, there is a spectrum, a rainbow of different genders. And when I'm saying there are only male and female, basically, I'm not only the flat earther. If I were a flat earther, they would feel sorry for me, you know, bless his heart, you know, he has such antiquated views. But they're angry because I am challenging the make-believe world that they are trying to construct, and that's what it is. I mean, so many college kids are being educated with this ideal that, well, you know, male and female are only two ways of being human, that there are lots of different ways, when in actuality, yes, there are a bunch of different ways to be female. There are a bunch of different ways to be male. But really, those are the only two models that come out of the showroom, you know, at our creation. And an example of this, and I talk about this in the Federalist article, they there's a Portland, Oregon man, and you hear these things, a man, quote unquote, who gave birth to a child. He is a transgender individual, actually a woman. He has a uterus and ovaries and all that stuff, and he's able to give birth, but he sees himself as a man, and he is in a relationship with another man, and they got pregnant, and he gave birth, and all the news stories, he gave birth to a boy, and they named his boy Leo. Okay, according to gender theory, I would look at the mom, quote on, you know, quote, and say, okay, you've got a vagina, you've got a uterus, you've got ovaries, therefore you're a girl. And he would say, oh, no, you can't just look at my body parts and determine what I am. But that's just what they did with little Leo. You know, they cannot remain consistent with their own theory. And the media, you know, seems to not appreciate the irony there whatsoever. And you see that time and time and time again. And when you bring those kind of inconsistencies up to these folks, they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. And it's funny, but it's also sad because they are creating a worldview and a system that is intentionally contrary to reality. And guess what? Reality is going to smack you in the head. And that's what we see time and time again with gender theory.
When I first saw that headline, I wasn't so naive as to think that this was a true case of a man giving birth. I knew immediately that man meant woman. But my first thought when I saw the headline and read the story was, look, if this really is what it claims to be, I should be reading this in a medical journal as some sort of amazing medical breakthrough or anomaly, and I should have a doctor explaining to me how it is a bona fide man a chromosomal man actually managed to give birth to a child. But I wasn't reading it in a medical journal because I think even doctors who have bought into this ideology don't want to ruin their reputations by writing up a big article about a woman who thinks she's a man giving birth to a baby. Because that's a dog. Yeah. That's a dog bites man story.
Right. And that is a great, great point, that if this were actually a thing, that serious people would be talking about it seriously. But what it is like, okay, that's a woman with a uterus and ovaries that's taking hormones and has a beard. No, that's not shaking up any category for me whatsoever. You understand what it's about. But something that you said is very pertinent, that this whole idea that, well, somebody can be an embodied female but actually be a male, there is no scientific discovery that determines that that's true. It is all purely, and I want to say, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but it is purely ideology. It is that way because a group of people want and wish it to be that way. There is nothing that a doctor can go into the person and say, okay, we found this part of their physiology that really does illustrate that, yes, they are an embodied or a bodied male, but they're actually female. It just exists in the mind of the person. And that's a psychosis, you know, unfortunately. I don't mean that as an accusation. I say it compassionately.
I wonder about that thing you mentioned earlier, that what you find when you call people who identify themselves as something in between or neither male nor female, when they come up and actually meet you face to face, what you find is either a woman trying really, really hard to pass as a man, mm-hmm. or to take on male characteristics externally, or a man who's trying really, really hard to do the same thing with female characteristics. Doesn't that, to me, it's kind of like imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yes.
The fact that they would imitate the opposite sex seems to bolster the notion that there are only two sexes to choose from.
Well, you are exactly right. And within this community, you know, if you go to a meeting one of the gender studies meetings and you say you're a transgender person, they will say, are you an MTF or an FTM? That means male to female or female to male. Now, for those keeping track at home, that's only two options. That's called binary. And they say that binary is terribly bad. You never have transgender people transing to, well, I'm a male, but now I've gone to the 26th type of gender or the 15th type of gender. It is only between male and female. And when you bring that up to them, they'll go, yeah, that's a good point too. You know, and again, the L and the G and LGBT, that's very binary too. What is a lesbian? It's a woman who is only interested in other women. Who is she not interested in? She's not interested in men. Is there anybody else she's not interested in? Well, according to gender theory, you would have to name a whole bunch of other genders. But no, it's just she's a woman who's not interested in men. She's interested in women. That, again, is very binary. It confines you to the male and the female. So, Todd, when I say on campus that I believe that humanity exists in male and female, and I get booed, they believe that same thing, too, from their own rhetoric, but they simply cannot admit it. And it is very interesting to, you know, graciously point that out to them and see the oh snap look on their face. Like, yeah, that's a good point. But it is so obvious. They just do not see it. And to make it spiritual, to bring in the spiritual aspect, it scales upon their eyes. I see it all the time.
So do you have the college students who will approach you afterwards and maybe just catch you as you're getting in your car because they don't want to be seen talking to you, except maybe to, unless they're, you know, or agreeing with you, saying, yeah, this is crazy. This is insane. This is, I know my generation is messed up, but this is about as messed up as any generation could possibly get.
You know, it's interesting because yes and no. I mean, one, I have never had a student, unless they're, you know, just with me and you can just tell. But what I do is I have gay and lesbian and trans friends who are adults, and they will admit a lot of this stuff is just crazy. You know, I mean, first of all, with this whole LGBT thing, they're like, you know what? They just keep adding stuff onto this. Where does it stop? It's just so ridiculous and silly. And they know the binary thing. You know, they'll say, of course humanity is binary. And so it is interesting that, you know, like these professionals, there's scholars that I interact with that are lock, stock, and barrel on the other side of the issue, but they realize a lot of these just goofy inconsistencies, which is encouraging in that, first of all, it's not like everybody on the other side believes all this junk, just like every Christian doesn't believe the silliness that some Christians believe, you know. But I do find that, not among the students, unfortunately, but among, you know, the more professional adults, yeah, they realize that a lot of this is just goofy rhetoric that has no connection with reality at all.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, many of these students, especially those in that category that approach you afterwards to identify something other than male and female, will graduate from college and no longer have ready access to their gender fluid, gender theory classes, and they're going to enter what the rest of us live in, which is the real world where binary actually works and it makes sense. And I wonder, what do they face? You approach this compassionately, but what do they face in a world that's trying to tell them that they can be whatever they want to be, but in reality it doesn't work?
No, see, and that's exactly right. Once you go out of your little fairy tale world and you go into the real world, well, guess what? But increasingly what's happening is they're developing power to say, you will be prosecuted by the force of law if you do not use the pronouns for me that you want me to use. They are gaining power. And if you do not go along with their make-believe world, you will be the one that will be punished. And we're seeing that increasingly. And we need to know that. So it's not like, you know, the real world will kind of smack them into reality. They are really shaping the real world into their own creative and imaginary world, unfortunately, and doing it with great force.
Glenn Stanton is Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family and author of the books The Remakes All the Difference and Loving My LGBT Neighbor. A recent column also for The Federalist titled Not Even Trans Apologists Can Keep Their Ideology Straight, and you can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Glenn, thank you, and keep up the good work.
Hey, Todd. Thank you, man.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Joel Olowski joins us. The church is preparing to remember 3rd century Bishop Cyprian of Carthage on the 16th, and we'll do so with him on the other side of the break, a man who at first fled persecution and then becomes a martyr under persecution and dealt with many Christians who had abandoned the faith or at least pretended to do so under persecution. We'll talk about Cyprian after this.
The last A in classical is for Aesop and all good moral instruction. Rather than approach character development as a separate subject, in classical education we carefully select all fables, stories, literature, music, and even exquisite classroom art with an embedded moral compass to guide our way. Aesop's fables, taught for millennia, embody this practice. A classical school or home library intentionally looks different from a public library. From infancy through the university level, we are not casual about teaching. A classical education is careful to teach that which will never need to be unlearned. With embedded Christian catechesis, the teaching of the faith, the student's character is formed from within. Above all, a classical education is a formative education. See our recommended literature list at ccle.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Religious liberty. Christians engaging the media. The for you of Christianity. Christian marriage. The sexual revolution. The Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.